This is the Current Federal Tax Developments for the week of October the 1st, 2018. Current Federal Tax Developments are brought to you by Kaplan Professional Education and by your state society of CPAs. This week, we're going to be looking at a few developments that have taken place in the area of taxes. We're going to take a look at a Wall Street Journal report that the IRS is going to issue guidance regarding the meals and entertainment deduction, something that's kind of a big issue for us this week. We're going to be looking at also the IRS is going to issue guidance on credit for paying employee for FMLA leave. That will also take effect. You know, we'll take a look at how that came out this week. We're going to be looking at IRS guidance on moving expenses. So the IRS guidance on moving expenses that were reimbursed in 2018 but paid in 2017. And what's going to happen, you know, I should say, were incurred in 17, paid in 2018. So basically, that's kind of an issue for reimbursement issues, one of those interesting little problems that we have. We're going to talk about the special per diem rates this year and how they are working, you know, including high-low amounts and those issues. Well, we're going to take a look at an IRS agent that tried to qualify as an innocent spouse and actually successfully qualified as an innocent spouse in his situation. So we're into the fall. And as we always know, it's fall, so the fun starts now. And we're here the first week of October, so it's going to get fun for the next couple of weeks. And we always have a little bit of interesting time as we go through this period. So we're going to work on this here and see we get our stuff filed. So I'm hoping to keep everything up to date at this point. And I'm hoping to keep doing the broadcast all the way through for both next week and the 15th of October. Just going to warn you, though, that unfortunately I've got deadlines all over the place, just like you do. So we may be a little late or we may even miss one of them, but I'm going to hope we're going to get them because there's important stuff coming down. And in fact, one of the pieces of important stuff that may be coming down was suggested to us this week by a report in the Wall Street Journal. Laura Saunders, in her report, in her article, Order the State, Client Meal Deductions Will Be Allowed in the Wall Street Journal Online on September the 28th, gave us information about what the IRS is going to do regarding the meals question. As you may remember, as part of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the Congress repealed any deduction for entertainment by businesses. This creates a potential problem. Gary McBride had an excellent article dealing with entertainment expenses, you know, and the history of 274 and what entertainment was and how meals interacted with that. That was published in Tax Notes earlier this year. And Gary noted a couple of things that got us very concerned. First, when 274 first came into law, it was very clear meals were going to be considered entertainment because Congress felt they had to write special rules that exempted casual business meals from being considered entertainment and being subjected to limited deductions. That was 274E1. Later, Congress came back and actually added back, you know, took out E1 at a later time when they went to actually make meals subject to the same 50% disallowance. Now, the catch is, and even in the 1986 Tax Act conference report, Gary noted, meals were still consistently referred to as entertainment under 274. They're entertainment. Now, again, at that point, it didn't matter if they were or weren't entertainment, because entertainment was 50% disallowed, but under 274K, business meals were 50% disallowed, so we really didn't care which one it was. It didn't really matter. But as Gary said, but the history was, it appears Congress thought they were entertainment. However, when Congress passed the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, in the conference committee report, we have this statement that the repeal of deduction for entertainment does not mean so business meals are still fine. Except when the conference committee report gave us an example of the type of business meals that are ordinary and necessary, all they told us was employees in travel. Didn't deal with the most obvious meal, which is when you take out a client. You know, you take a client to lunch or dinner for marketing purposes, you know, if you're going to talk about it, business, you're going to take them out, you're going to keep them happy. You know, is that going to be deductible? Well, Laura reports, Laura reports in this case, that the IRS is planning to give us guidance that says that business meals will not be deemed to be entertainment if they are reasonable business meals. Now, of course, the problem is we don't know what reasonable means. but probably we're still going to be okay if you take your client out to lunch and you discuss their business, you know, and what's going on, how things are happening, you know, and, you know, the results this quarter that you have from your financial statements, and you pick up the check, it looks like we're still getting that 50% deduction. At least that's what's strongly implied by Laura's article. Laura even said that you could go to a baseball game, and while the baseball tickets would not be deductible, you could still take a 50% deduction for the hot dogs and anything else you bought at the concession stand for the client, that would still be considered a deductible meal. So we'll see if that example also makes it into the final examples. You have to wonder sometimes when you see an example like that, was that one that was handed to her because they're going to put something like that in the regulations? We'll just have to check. The key thing to remember, though, is we do not yet have actual IRS guidance. That's really important to understand. Details matter in tax. Details matter greatly in tax. So I'm 90% certain we're going to get the types of meals I described, but there's always that 10% chance that the IRS has written this in such a way that it's going to have a carve out of meals you might not expect will get carved out, that won't be considered to be, that will be considered to be entertainment style meals. We just need to figure out how that reads. We did not get this. Now, Laura published this early on Friday morning. I was hopeful that by the end of the day, Friday, we'd have something. We didn't. We don't know if this will be a notice, in which case then it could come out as early as Monday, you know, October 1st, or is this going to be part of regulations? And if it's regulations, you know, is that not good? That has to go to Office of Management and Budget. And we haven't seen anything yet about 274 regulations going to OMB. So that could mean quite a wait for this. I'm hopeful at the very least the IRS issue is a notice that tells us what they plan to do in regulations. And we get something here fairly quickly so that we can do the year-end planning, because we are starting to run to that time of year. But in any event, keep your eyes open. We're cautiously optimistic that we're going to be able to make use of this deduction and that we're going to get some benefit for business meals this year. As I say, we just have to watch the cautiously optimistic side. Notice 2018-71 was issued by the IRS this week, issued on September 24, 2018. It deals with the credit under Section 45S for paying employees who are on FMLA mandated leave. The FMLA, you know, remember the Family Medical Leave Act, that act states that employers who are above a certain size in an area are required to offer all employees up to 12 weeks of unpaid leave for certain medical events, either affecting themselves or affecting members of their family. Now, this leave, you know, is mandated, again, not paid. What we mandate is effectively you have to keep their job around. So when they come back, they have to have a job as long as they come back at the end of the 12 weeks or before the end of the 12 weeks, their job is still there. Congress, however, and in fact, Susan Collins was the one who pushed hard for this when the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was going through, realizes that employees, though, have a difficult time using this benefit, considering that no pay option is hooked to it. So the idea is Congress wants to encourage employers to offer this as a paid option, even though they're not required to. So as long as they're paying at least 50% of what the wage the person was receiving before they went on leave was, Congress is going to give them a 12.5% credit, and that credit goes up all the way to 25% if they pay a greater percentage of the employee's salary while they're on leave. In order to take this credit, though, they must have a written policy. In fact, that's what the notice tells us. We need a written policy in place. And the written policy needs to be in place before the person applies before the person goes on leave. Why is that true? Because it's not hard to figure out that if you didn't do that, a company would, you know, wait till they saw who got sick or whose family member got sick and then decide if they really wanted to pay for that person, right? And so suddenly they'd say, oh, yeah, we're going to pay for that person. So now suddenly we retroactively adopt a leave program to pay for that person so we get the credit. As soon as they come back to work, we decide, oh, that policy is just so expensive, we can't afford it anymore, and we terminate it. Yeah, they don't want to see those sorts of games. So it has to be in writing before the person starts taking leave. However, Garrison gets his guidance out until September. So in recognition of that, for 2018, there's a special rule that does allow you to retroactively now write up your program, put it in line, and have it go back to the first of the year. So you did not have to have, you didn't have to mind read what the IRS wanted in the program. This offers, this notice is a series of questions and answers. If you are establishing such a program, or if you have a program, which a lot of employers do, where the employer already offers paid short-term disability leave, you know, you may want to take a look at using this. Now, one quirky thing that they discuss there is be very, very careful, you know, if, for instance, you have short-term disability leave, but it's insured, but the insurance carrier has a pre-existing condition exclusion. This has to be offered to all employees equally. So unless the employer is going to pick it up for those who had pre-existing conditions, you're not going to be able to take a credit for having paid for employees when they were on leave on an insured program, because if it has pre-existing conditions, it didn't cover everybody. That's a bit of a problem. Now, as I said, Susan Collins pushed for this, and like her medical program, you know, the 7.5% of AGI medical rule, it's only good for 2 years. Unlike medical, it's not 16, it's not 17 and 18. This one is 18 and 19. So this program is still good through the end of next year. But after that, we're going to have to see if it gets renewed. Now, will we see a renewal of these Susan Collins items, the two-year items? The medical to me seems like a really good chance in the lame duck session this year. But I wouldn't bet on Congress to touch this one, this lame duck session, because, hey, they got a whole year to wait. Why would Congress do anything early? So, you know, just keep your eye on this. Remember, these programs, the credit's only good for 2 years. So remember, the credit ends next year. More employee benefit notices come down. This is notice 2018-75, issued on September the 21st of 2018. In the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, Congress changed Section 132 as it related to the exclusion from an employee's wages of moving expenses reimbursed by the employer. The moving expenses that are of a type, had the employee paid them, they would be able to deduct them on Form 1040. The problem was, it wasn't clear from the way the law was written whether this was for reimbursements paid after January 1st, 2018, or for expenses related to moves after January 1st, 2018, on or after that date. And depending upon how you read it, there could have been a problem. Let's say somebody moved in December of 2017, and the reimbursement, you know, the company hadn't yet received the bill from the moving company, or the receipts hadn't been submitted for reimbursement. We also had, you know, the taxpayers on, or the employees on move, the one-time transit, you know, those hadn't been paid. If those weren't paid to 18, did they have to go in the W-2? Those 2017 moves created us a problem. The IRS ruled in this notice that, in fact, those payments can still be excluded if they are paid or reimbursed in 2018 by the employer, as long as the move took place back in 17. All well and good, except a lot of those moves and those reimbursements have already taken place this year, and a lot of employers have already included that in the W-2 because, hey, you didn't know the answer, and the last thing you want to discover at the end of the year is that you should have withheld FICA, and it wasn't withheld. And this was taxable wages. It was subject to all the withholdings, and you didn't do it. So the IRS has in this notice information about getting that fixed, how you make the revised 941s, and what you do about reimbursing the employees for the withholdings in this question. You want to take a look at that. If you've had a reimbursement program, you paid somebody in 18 for a 17 move, you treated it as taxable, you got some 941 amendments to do and some other work. You want to take a look at the guidance in this ruling so you make sure you do that right. But otherwise, it's a relatively taxpayer-friendly ruling. Certainly one that we're going to be considering favorably this year. Another employee benefits. I told you, employee benefits week. This is going to be notice 2018-77 on September the 26th. This looks at the special per diem rates that are used by the IRS. They were published. We're about to enter the federal government's new fiscal year on October 1st. The federal government's fiscal year is when the per diem rates change. Okay. The per diem rates change on October 1st. So this week, the new rates apply. The IRS luckily got us the new special rates, you know, well, less than a week before you needed them, but, you know, they got them. So the special rates for transportation industry, $66 for inside the continental United States, $71 for outside. If you are that rare employer who does not reimburse, you know, who does meals and incidentals, actually, let's say pays, you know, requires receipts for that and pays from the receipts, but still wants to pay for the incidentals, you know, all those things that they get that aren't going to be on the meals receipts, you know, they need toothpaste or whatever, all those things, that's still $5 per day. So you can still issue that even if you're not using per diem for their meals and you're not using per diem for their lodging. But a lot of employers use, you know, meals and incidentals. They go ahead and do both of those. If you're using the high-low method, you may remember the high-low method was one the IRS tried to get rid of back in 2014. There was a big uproar, people saying we can't live without that. So the IRS has kept it around. The high-low method, there's only two per diem rates. One's for high-cost localities, one's for every other locality. You either, if your locality that the employee is staying in is on the high-cost list, which, by the way, the new high-cost list is part of this notice, then you reimburse the high rate. If they're staying in a location that's not on the high-cost list, you reimburse the low rate. For this year, the high rate will be $71 and the low rate will be $60. That's an increase of $3. Remember, these rates aren't required to be used. You can go ahead and actually use the standard GSA per diem rates from the website. Remember, those also change on January 1st. I should say on October 1st. So if you do follow that rate, remember that you're looking for the new tables this week, not the old ones. Last week's expenses should be under the old tables. This week's expenses under the new tables. That's the way that works. I want to, now, before somebody panics, yes, you can elect to just use one table for the entire calendar year. So you could use the one published for October 1st of 17, September 30 of 18 for all of 18. If you're doing that, then this new table will take effect next year. But if you do actually use the real tables, like when I get reimbursed, that's what's used, then you want to make sure you're grabbing from the right table this week. We have changed. If you download that Excel spreadsheet from the GSA with all the rates, you want to go get the new 2018 version and be sure you're using that this week. Our final case this week is a tax court case, the case of Merlo versus Commissioner, Tax Court Summary Opinion 2018-47. It was issued on September the 24th, 2018. In this case, the issue was an IRS agent was attempting to qualify as an innocent spouse. The agent said, well, I should qualify as innocent spouse because of the nature of the situation that led to the understatement that it just really wasn't my fault. And in fact, at the end of the day, the IRS agreed with him. It was not his fault. The taxpayers, their 2011 return went on extension on April 15th of 2012. Somewhere shortly after that date, the wife moved out of the home. Okay. The husband was the IRS agent. Wife moved out of the home. This is one of those divorces where the parties really didn't talk much with each other. So they had very little or close to no communication between the parties once this came together. And this dragged out for a while. We ended up getting all the way to October 12th. Before they actually got around to finally trying to resolve their tax returns for 2011. And so what ends up happening then is the taxpayer on that case, he went ahead and he prepared a draft return based on notes he had. He did not actually have the wife's W-2s. Okay. Based on those notes, he prepared a draft return. He gave that draft return to his attorney, who was to give it to her attorney, who was to give it to her. All this on the 12th of October. It listed wage income. He had a worksheet, that had this, right? In this case, $4,629 was W-2 wages that she had received, his soon-to-be ex-spouse, from disability policy from Prudential, and $1,182 was received from Ethan Allen. So she got this return. She reviewed the return. She had some changes that she made. He also, now at the same time, he said, look, we're going to have to submit your W-2s. So he asked for copies of her W-2s at the same time. She did not provide those. When she looked at the Michigan return, because Michigan was the state return, she discovered her wages that were listed for her on the worksheet, and she went back and said, and he had put down those wages, Ethan Allen. She had said, well, no. My wages for Ethan Allen were only the $1,182. So that's all my wages from Ethan Allen. She didn't say, and oh, by the way, and the rest of those wages were for Prudential. Now, he got this note from her saying, you know, I looked at the return, I reviewed the return, but my wages from Ethan Allen were only $1,182. And he took that to mean that she wanted the wages reduced down to that level. So he backed off an amount that was exactly equal to what was on the potential W-2 that he didn't have, but she did. She got this return. She signed it. She filed it and never said a word about these wages. IRS comes knocking, as we said. So that left some confusion. He'd taken them off. She didn't say anything about it. The IRS came knocking. The taxpayer said, oh, those aren't my wages. That's another taxpayer. I don't know if he was being intentionally, dense, or if he just didn't notice that it was his wife's, his former spouse's ID number. But in any event, he didn't say, these are my former spouse's. The IRS did figure that out, though. It was former spouse's, and figured out, oh, he must be asking for an innocent spouse claim. So they got the information from him, and they reviewed it, and they decided that, yes, you know, what he had done was reasonable, given that she had come back and said, look, my wages are wrong, right? My Ethan Allen wages are wrong. And she didn't give him the W-2s, even though they'd been requested. So because of that, you know, and she failed to review the return to notice this, they said, yep, you're not liable for that. She is. Obviously, the not innocent spouse complained about this, saying, wait, he obviously knew about those wages. They were in his initial total. You know, he knew or he should have known, and I shouldn't be held responsible. You know, we should be jointly responsible for this. The tax court didn't agree. The tax court agreed with what the IRS had come to the conclusion, that in fact, you know, it made perfect sense that he interpreted that statement to mean reduce the wages. You've got too much on my return for wages from Ethan Allen. You know, and that means you got too much in return on wages for me. So they said that's perfectly reasonable. She had the W-2s. She could have caught this easily. She caught other errors, you know, other issues, you know, and she should have realized that that note was not exactly clear. And because of that, they said, yep, it's fair. She is the party that's responsible. He gets innocent spouse relief. Under 6015C, here's what had to be shown. He needs to show that first, they're divorced. That's fine. The income in question wasn't his. That's also fine. He didn't know about the income and shouldn't have known about it. Or if he knew about it, he was coerced into signing. Well, he never claimed to be coerced into signing. They were clearly divorced. They hadn't lived together. So the bottom line question became, did he know or should he have known about the wages from Prudential? The court decided under this fact pattern, he had acted reasonably. He had no reason to know that she had a second W-2. So because of that, he's an innocent spouse. It's fall. We're coming up on October 15th deadlines, and then all your CPE. Be sure to sign up. Check your state CPA societies for courses on CPE. I mean, I'm going to be on the road a lot beginning in October. I'm going to be presenting courses in Boise, Idaho, which will be dealing with multi-state taxation of business, which includes the issues on the Wayfair case, and both the sales tax and the income tax implications of Wayfair. Because remember, Wells Fargo took a $500 million hit on income taxes because they think more states are going to want to collect income taxes from them. There's an income tax issue here. We're also going to do a whole separate day on the business aspects of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, spending a lot of time on 199 Cap A, the qualified business income deduction, that 20% thing, but also talking about, you know, bonus depreciation, whatever comes up on these entertainment issues. We're going to be talking about opportunity zones, all of those things, business-related items we'll talk about at that course. I'll also be doing three conferences. I'll be doing conferences for the Arizona Society of CPAs the first week of November. Immediately after that, I'm going to be doing the conference in Oregon for the Oregon Society of CPAs in Portland, their tax conference. And I'm going to be doing the Minnesota Tax Conference the following Monday in Minneapolis. Between the Oregon Tax Conference and the Minnesota Tax Conference, I'm going to be doing sessions in Tucson on ethics, Arizona taxes, and current federal tax developments. I'll be doing sessions also later. I'll be doing sessions for various things for the Ohio Society coming up in Cincinnati. I'll be doing sessions for the Indianapolis, for I should say for the Indiana Society, not the Indianapolis Society, Indiana Society. I'll be picking up those courses in that mix. I've got a bunch of things happening coming up. So check the calendars. See where we'll be. We've got a couple there. Arizona, by the Arizona, I've also got an Arizona course coming up that will look at the issues coming up on 451B. The course was initially going to be, you know, how the new revenue recognition project and whether, you know, you want to make accounting method changes to comply with that. Now, if you have an applicable financial statement, audit financial statements count. Remember, we got 451B conformity. We want to talk about what that means for businesses too. And that's a 4-hour class coming up in November. You know, check your catalog. I've got my courses. We have other instructors teaching Kaplan courses in both taxes and in accounting and auditing. We also have, you know, and your state societies have a whole bunch of other qualified instructors teaching other courses in tax. There's tons of things coming up. You really need to get guidance, certainly in tax this year. We got lots happening. You want to go get your guidance this time. Check your catalog. Be sure you've signed up and sign up soon. This has been the Current Federal Tax Developments for the week of October the 1st. You can catch our regular updates online at currentfederaltaxdevelopments.com. You can send any questions or comments to me at zollers@currentfederaltaxdevelopments.com. On Twitter, you can follow me. I'm at Ed Zollers. And also, I follow discussions on the subreddit r/taxpros. I follow the Connect communities for the New Jersey and Arizona Society of CPAs. I try to keep up with those. I also take a look in from time to time to Tax Talk run by the Cal Society CPAs. By the way, that one is open to any CPA around the country, so you can check and sign up there. We certainly expect things to be happening. I am hopeful that my deadlines get enough under control that I will be able to get everything out, get the material together, get everything out for the next 2 weeks. And I'll apologize if we miss one. I hope not to miss both. I'm going to be very certain they're missing one is more is... I'm hoping not to miss one, but it's possible. We'll just phrase it that way. So be aware of that. And you guys are probably all listening to this after October 15th anyway, because, you know, you had better things to do. So in any event, do it. We're looking for the opportunity zone. Remember, we're looking for the whatever the Wall Street Journal is talking about in entertainment. So we got lots happening. So be sure to pay attention and, you know, catch up with us and watch for the postings coming here for Current Federal Tax Developments in the coming weeks.